All right, we're in Genesis chapter 25, and last time we left off right after verse 18, so we talked about the end of Abraham's life. This is a few years after the death of Sarah. Isaac had been married to Rebekah in chapter 24, and then we see that Abraham took another wife. Her name was Keturah, and they just had a whole bunch more children. I mean, Abraham's like, 140 years old, and he's just very prosperous. but although he had all these other sons beside Isaac, God told him, "In Isaac shall thy seed be called." He was very specific. This, as it says in Romans 9, this was the purpose of God according to election. God said, you know what? I've chosen the way. It's going to be Isaac. He's the seed. You can have other sons. That's fine. But in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And all these promises that I'm making, they're going to come through this seed. And that's a pattern that's going to continue. And we're going to see God is going to make some selections and some elections in the coming chapters. So then we talked about Ishmael and the sons that he had. And this, again, was according to God's promise that he gave to Abraham. He said he's going to beget 12 princes. And he did. And we read about them a little bit. But then in verse 19, this is where we'll pick it up today, goes back to Isaac. And these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled within her. And she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, "Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. And his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field. And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he sware unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Okay, well, this is a very, very interesting chapter and passage of Scripture. Let's go through it a little bit at a time. So starting in verse 19, these are the generations of Isaac. Again, generations, it's not talking about a lifespan or a time here. It can be. In different places, it talks about generations can mean different things. But in this case, he's talking about the generations of Isaac's body. It's talking about his offspring, his children. Okay, these are the children generated from Isaac. So Abraham begat Isaac, And it says, Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban the Syrian. So here's where it tells you Isaac was 40 years old when he got married to Rebekah. And that is significant because a few verses later, it's going to tell you that Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. 80, that's 60. So what does that mean? It means she was barren for 20 years. Imagine you get married, you try having children, 20 years goes by, and there are none. So what happens, verse 21, Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren.
Yep.
And that's important. I mean, that's who you want to call on. He's the one with that power. Isaac understood what happened in his father's life. Like his mother, Sarah, she was barren for a lot longer than 20 years, actually. But he understood the Lord has the power to make this happen. I'm recalled there's a certain person in my life, and shortly after I met him, he was over 40, his wife was over 40, and they were childless, and I'll never forget this, but when I asked him if he had any children, he said no, and you could just see that he was like kind of sad. And in that night, I went home and I prayed for them to have a child. And guess what? They had a child. And she's like 16, 17 years old right now. And the Lord answered that prayer.
Amen.
That's all I can say. The Lord answers prayer. He does stuff like that. So if there's something that you really want, something that's important to you, it doesn't have to be for you either. It could be for someone else. Like Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife.
Yes, sir. That's good.
The Lord will hear you. So she was barren for 20 years. It says the Lord was entreated of him. He heard his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So this is an answer to prayer. This is from the Lord. But what does it say in verse 22? The children struggled together within her. There's this internal struggle now. Something's going on. Like, this is not normal. And they understood that. And Rebekah said, if it be so, if this is really from the Lord, if this is an answer to prayer, why am I like this? Why am I thus? Why is this happening? If this is from God, why do I have this internal struggle? And she went to inquire of the Lord. Amen. It's a good person to inquire of. Again, this is from the Lord. The Lord knows exactly why this is happening. So what's his answer? The Lord said unto her, verse 23, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. The Lord gives four different things to explain. He doesn't really say why it's happening on the inside, but he's just kind of saying, look, there's a lot going on here, okay, that's behind the scenes that you don't really know about yet. This is what's going on, and this is how things are going to turn out. But he says, basically, there's two nations in your womb. There's twins. There's going to be two children in there. That's why you're going through the struggles. And also, the struggle is kind of a picture. They're kind of at odds with each other. But there's four different things here. First, he says, two nations are in thy womb. So there's two boys born, Esau and Jacob. And these boys end up becoming two nations, just like he said. Edom and Israel. He also says, two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And when you look at the two boys, you can definitely see, we're going to look at this, they are two manner of people. They are completely different. Now, this happens in an earthly sense. Like, it just happens in life. You get two people together, and guess what? They're different. There's differences. There's no surprise, you know? Everybody's different. But this is kind of like an extreme case of that. And they're two brothers who are very different. They're two manner of people. And it's also a spiritual picture. Two manner of people, you could say that this two manner is, well, carnal and spiritual. Now, I can't say that Jacob was always spiritual and Esau was always carnal. I don't think it really happened like that. But just overall, they're two manner of people. And these are very broad categories that we can put around them. But again, we'll look at that more later, what the differences are. He also says, one people, the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now, when he says the elder shall serve the younger, it's very obvious who's who. Because one's elder and one's younger. Esau comes out first. He's the elder. That's very obvious. That's very, very clear. The elder shall serve the younger. But this other part I actually find to be the most interesting. He says, the one people shall be stronger than the other people. Now, who's who? One people shall be stronger than the other people. So you have to ask the question. He doesn't clarify that here. And I think the answer to that depends on which strength you're looking at. One people should be stronger than the other people. Because you look at Esau, and you look at his nation, okay, and the type of people that they were. And in one sense, they're stronger than Israel. They're stronger than Jacob. Okay, it's very clear. You read about these boys, and Esau is a cunning hunter, you know. Kind of reminds you a little bit maybe of Nimrod. This is a guy who just, he goes out, and he's strong, and he hunts, you know. And Jacob's not really like that. But in an earthly sense, in a physical, in a carnal sense, Esau is the stronger one. But also, we're going to find out a few chapters later that Jacob has something that Esau doesn't have. Jacob has power with God. Right. And when you look at it that way, yeah, he's a lot stronger than his brother. You know why? Because if God be for us, who can be against us? And that's a real strength. So kind of this can be taken like two ways. It just kind of depends on what your perspective is. They're both stronger than the other in a different sense. So verse 24, it says, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out all over like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. Well, that's got to be interesting, you know. He comes out all hairy. Like, that doesn't happen a lot with babies, right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe if they're like Greek or Italian or something, you know. Those guys get pretty hairy, but I don't know. This guy was, he came out red all over like a hairy garment. They called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out. And his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. Okay. I'm going to hold off on the comparison. I'm going to kind of save that to the end. But we'll just continue on with the story here. So again, Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. He's 60 years old. Verse 27, and the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. Um, So again, you could see they're two different manner of people. Their lifestyle was different. Esau was a hunter, a man of the field. Jacob was a plain man. And it says he dwelled in tents. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean about his lifestyle? Was he also a hunter? No. Actually, he was a shepherd. Okay, he dwelt in a tent, in tents, and you know they would have their flocks and herds there. And then when they've grazed over this land, then they're going to move on to some other land, and that's why they have tents, so they can move them. Okay, but he was a shepherd. You'll see that later on, especially when he goes to work for Laban. And that's what his occupation is. He's taking care of the flocks and the herds, and he was very good at it. And the Lord blessed him in that. So then we get to verse 28, and it says, "And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob." And you look at this, and at first glance, oh, man, I thought this Isaac was like some really good man, this spiritual guy. And here it just looks like he's so shallow. But he loved Esau because he ate of his venison? No. Okay. Here's the thing. There's a lot of different types of love in the Bible. You go back to Genesis 22... and God says to Abraham, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and go offer him up for a burnt offering." He's not saying, look, you take your son, the son that you love, because he's a good cook. Or because he's a star player on the football team, you know? He's not talking like that. He's talking about like a real deep love, a real deep care. It's a completely different type of love than when it says Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison. Yeah, if that was the same thing, it would be kind of shallow. Like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, this boy, I mean, I just really love him. Why? Well, because he's a good cook. Or because he's a good hunter. Or because he brings me something. Okay? That is a completely different kind of love. That doesn't mean that he didn't care for Jacob. Or that he cared for Esau more than he cared for Jacob. It's not talking about that. But Esau did have a place that was special to his father. Because, hey, we got this thing, you know? I mean... He does. He brings me this venison and it's really good. And I kind of have a favorite in that sense. It also says that Rebekah loved Jacob. Maybe there was something else about Jacob that's not even mentioned here that Rebekah had more of a connection to, you know? I don't know. Maybe he helped her in the garden. Who knows? It doesn't say. Okay? But that can happen sometimes, you know, you as a parent, you have all these children and, you know, maybe there's just something for one of them that's like kind of makes them stand out in some way. And, you know, I just really like this kid. He does this or he's this. I don't know. That's about all I can say on it. I'm not a father. Take it with a grain of salt. Okay. I'm just looking at what's written here. Okay. Verse 29, it says, "And Jacob sawed pottage. And Esau came from the field, and he was faint." So, sawed pottage, I don't know, maybe like a stew or something. I never had pottage. I don't know if any of you have. Tells us later it was pottage of lentils. But Esau came from the field and he was faint. And look, I'll be honest. I don't know how serious that is. He says in this passage, "I am at the point to die." I don't know if that's really true. I mean, to be at the point to die because you need something to eat, that's something that doesn't happen overnight. It probably takes at least a couple of weeks. There's people that have fasted for weeks at a time and eaten nothing. Jesus was one of them. He fasted for 40 days. That's a little extreme. Personally, in my life, I've fasted for a week before and eaten nothing. I was not at the point to die. I was at the point to eat. I wanted to eat. I was hungry. And you know what? I got this big plate of food and I'm going to tear this thing up. And I took two bites and I was done. Because my stomach had just shrunk so much it couldn't even handle it. Okay? I have a feeling that he's being a little overly dramatic and he's just placing a little too much emphasis on his belly and how hungry he is. And I don't know. Maybe he's been out in the field a couple days. Maybe a few days, like, and I'll tell you what, if he had been out there so long that he was really at the point to die, that's on him. He shouldn't have been out that long. He should have never put himself in that position. But anyway, I do think he's being a little overly dramatic. But he says, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage." That's an interesting phrase. That same red pottage. I don't know exactly what Esau meant by that. But it says, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom." So I'll tell you what I see there. So first of all, the name Edom, it means red. It's very similar to the name Adam. When God created Adam, gave him the name Adam, and I think the connection there is with the earth. If you look at the words in Hebrew, the word for ground is like Adama, something like that, and the earth in that region was red. So God creates him out of the red earth. He created him from the dust of the earth, gives him the name Adam, and then later on he tells him, "For dust thou art," you know. Edom is very similar. It's almost the same name in Hebrew, but it also means red, just kind of in a little bit different way. But you saw when he came out, when he was born, he came out of the womb. It says he came out red. And then it's like when he sees this pottage, he says, "Feed me with that same red pottage, that same." Well, in my mind, the connection goes to himself because he's the other red that we see in this context. And it just speaks to how carnal he is. I see meat. Guess what I am? I'm meat. I'm carnal. It's just like me. Feed me with that same red pottage. That's what it says to me. Literally what happened, I think he's just saying that same red pottage right there, that one that you're cooking. I think that's what it's literally saying. But anyway, it says, "Therefore was his name called Edom." And it seems like that name was given to him not so much because of the color he was when he was born, but because of this story that he traded his birthright for some red pottage. So verse 31, "And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright." And we see Esau's attitude when he makes this offer. He says, "Behold, I'm at the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do me?" What is Esau's attitude? Well, this birthright, I mean, it's not something I can eat. What good is it? I'd rather have that pottage. But what we see from Jacob is a completely different attitude. Now, maybe you say, well, Jacob's, he's kind of a little jerk. And he's just trying to take advantage of his brother. And what he did wasn't really that great. He should have just gave him the pottage. But that's true. I see that too. Like, You know, let brotherly love continue. My brother, you know, he's hungry. He comes to me for food. I'm not going to say, hey, sell me something. Sell me your convertible, you know. Like, sell me something valuable and I'll give you this pottage, you know. But what I do see here, and again, this is a story of real people. This is really something that happened. Just like when I come to church and I have interactions with all of you, and, you know, that's real history. That's a real story. But this is recorded not just for that, but because there's spiritual principles in here. And one thing that I see from Jacob is I see the opposite of Esau. Again, two manner of people. Esau despises his birthright. We've been talking lately about what it means biblically to hate or to despise. And sometimes it just means that you give something second place. Well, that's what he did. That's what Esau did here. It's not saying that he hated his birthright, like he just couldn't stand it. He wanted to get rid of it, looking for an opportunity to get rid of the birthright. How stupid would that be? No, the problem is that he gave it second place. And he gave the thing that was lesser, that was inferior, that was temporal, he gave that first place. And he preferred that and he wanted that. Let's go over to Hebrews 12. Exactly. Hebrews chapter 12. There's not a lot in the New Testament said about Esau. There's a couple things. But this right here is probably the most important. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16. We'll start in verse 15. Let's start in verse 14. It says, follow peace with all men and holiness without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you and thereby many be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. Why does he bring up Esau, and why does he bring up fornicator or profane person? Okay. Well, we just saw what kind of person Esau is like. How he would esteem something temporal, carnal, so highly, and then lightly esteem that thing that he had that was really precious. Right. We're talking about the birthright. Okay? Now, Abraham sent away Ishmael, because I mean, God told him, look, in Isaac shall thy seed be called. So he sends him away. He's got all these other sons. You know what he does with them? He sends them away, and it says he gave all that he had to Isaac. You know how wealthy Abraham was? You know what kind of legacy Abraham left? And then Esau technically should have been next in line. What does he do? He sells it all for a bowl of pottage. And what's the connection here? Well, it says, lest there be any fornicator. Now, does the Bible ever say that Esau was a fornicator? Not that I'm aware of. Now, a little bit later than where we are right now, he's going to take a couple of wives from that land. Well, he's taking wives. Does that make him a fornicator? No, I don't think so, but let's continue on. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau. So it's calling Esau a profane person. Well, what does profane mean? As a verb, and this is what makes the noun, as a verb, profane is when you treat something holy, something precious, as though it's just, it's not holy. It's common. Yeah, it's just hum-ho, you know, whatever. You don't give it the proper respect, the proper place. That's profane. That's what he did with his birthright, and that's the point that Paul is making here. Why does he say fornicator? Because when you commit fornication, when you're a fornicator, you're doing the same thing. You're doing the same thing. You're taking something that's supposed to be holy, and you're just treating it like, oh, whatever. You know, I'll just do it wherever, whenever, with whoever. So there's a connection there. You say, well, Esau wasn't a fornicator. Let me tell you something. Fornication, there is an actual act. There is an actual thing that's literal. Like Jesus, you know, when he talked about adultery, he said, you know what? If you look on a woman with lust, you've already committed adultery in your heart. You could do the same thing with fornication. There are lots of ways that you can commit fornication without actually committing fornication. It's not just physical fornication too. There's spiritual fornication. But the warning is, don't be like Esau. That's why that story is recorded in there. It's for us to learn from and to see, like, if you're going to be a fornicator, if you're going to be a profane person, you're like him. Look at how stupid he was. Don't be like that. You got to realize what we have is precious. The promises that we have from God are precious. Don't trade it away for something carnal, something temporal, something that's going to just fade away. That's the lesson. I'm just going to do one more thing. I got a little comparison of these guys that I'm going to run through. So let's go back to Genesis 25 there. And so I'm just going to make a little comparison between these guys. Actually, you know what? There's one other thing that I wanted to mention. Is that when God said that the elder shall serve the younger, and he's saying, you know what? The younger is going to be the guy. He's going to be the one that I'm electing here. This is a pattern that's been going on since the beginning. You remember, think about Cain and Abel, right? Cain was the firstborn, but actually, he wasn't the seed. They kind of realized that after he killed Abel. It was actually Abel who was supposed to be the seed. And Seth, in a figure, is kind of like the resurrected Abel. And he ends up being the seed. Eve said, God hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. Okay? It's the younger, not the elder. Another one. Ishmael was actually the firstborn, but he ended up not being the seed. It was Isaac, the secondborn. We see it again with Esau and Jacob. Esau was the firstborn, but who's chosen? Who's the seed? Well, it's Jacob. We see it again. Zerah and Perez, they're the sons of Judah. Zerah came out first. They tied a scarlet thread around his toe, and then he pulled it in, and the other guy came out. It's like there's this pattern going that it always seems to be the second guy. When Joseph brings his two sons to his father for him to bless, and his father's, you know, he's old, he can't even see, and he's like, let me put my right hand on this guy. That was Ephraim instead of Manasseh. And he's like, oh, I know he's the youngest, but he's going to be greater. And there's that pattern. And finally, the last pattern that we see is Christ. There's the first Adam, but you know what? Adam is kind of like Edom. He's of the earth, earthy. Right. But the last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Okay. I don't know. We're pretty much out of time here. Do we have time? Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. I just want to go through a quick comparison of these two guys. I think it's very, it's very telling when you look at the two manner of people that God talked about. So first of all, again, like I just mentioned, Esau first, Jacob was the last. Esau, it says he was red, hairy all over. In a couple chapters, Jacob is going to talk about himself and he's going to say, I am a smooth man. He's smooth, while his twin brother apparently got all the hair. So he was hairy, Jacob was smooth. Esau, again, a cunning hunter, and maybe lived a similar kind of lifestyle to Nimrod. I don't know. I see later on when Jacob is a shepherd and he's leading around flocks and herds and families, and he's a nurturer, he's an investor. He builds up and nurtures and expands. And you know what we see Esau? Is he planting gardens? No. Is he leading flocks? No. What's he doing? He's leading around an army. Right. He's got 400 men with him. And I'm not trying to say that it's like it's bad to be a hunter or it's wrong to be a hunter, but there's a lesson in the two occupations. The shepherd is a nurturer. He's raising families. He's building up and growing. And a hunter, you know what he does? He goes out to steal and to kill and to destroy. He goes out and finds, I see these animals out here. Well, I'm going to kill this one and that's it. I'm just going to take it. I didn't invest anything in them.
Right.
I'm not growing up the family. I'm just going to take one. Again, I'm not preaching against hunters here. I'm just saying there's a lesson in the difference of these two lifestyles. I think that's part of what's being brought out here. It says that Esau was a man of the field. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 38, Jesus is going to be explaining a parable, and he's going to say straight out, the field is the world. Esau was a man of the world. He's a man of the field. Where was he coming from when he was so famished? He was coming from the field. Esau, again, he connected himself with the pottage, that same red pottage. It's red, just like me. And what did he do? He despised his birthright. He sold it. It says in Proverbs 23:23, buy the truth and sell it not. When you got something precious, spiritual, principle, something important, you want to pay something less to get it. And once you have it, don't sell it. We went through Revelation 3 the other night, and Jesus is, you know, he's going on the same principle. He's telling them, look, I've got the good stuff. Buy from me. I'm not going to give it to you for free. I want you to trade something lesser for it. Buy it of me. Something more important. Give up the pottage. I'll give you the birthright. That's what he's saying there. It's better. On the other hand, I kind of didn't really go back and forth the way I wanted to. But on the other hand, you see Jacob. Again, he's the last. His name means supplanter. He took his brother by the heel. And again, this is a picture of a carnal man and a spiritual man. Rebecca's like, hey, I've got this internal struggle, but it's of God. Well, what happened? Well, you've got a carnal man and you've got a spiritual man inside you. Well, that's us. You know, we've got an internal struggle. We've got a carnal man who wants to do these fleshly things. And to be honest, he'd rather have a bowl of pottage than have the birthright. He doesn't care. He'd probably rather sit home and watch football than come to church. But there's also a spiritual man, and they're warring against each other. They're struggling, wrestling together. And in God's design, the spiritual man is supposed to overtake. He's supposed to supplant the carnal. As he said, the elder shall serve the younger. The flesh is supposed to serve the spirit, not the other way around.
Amen.
Jacob, it says he's a plain man dwelling in tents. What does that word plain mean? You probably think of like plain yogurt. Well, that's the boring stuff, right? Go to Proverbs chapter 8. Now, plain, it can mean like flatland, you know, like grassland, you know, out on the plain. That's probably where he lived when he's raising his flocks and herds. But plain also means upright. It means pure. It's straightforward. Look at Proverbs chapter 8. And verse 1, doth not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? Look at the voice that we're talking about, wisdom and understanding. Verse 6, hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. And there's just a connection with plainness. We use great plainness of speech. There's a connection with plainness and uprightness. And I don't want you to miss that. That's not to say everything about Jacob was perfect. He had his flaws. God was going to deal with him. But he's a type of man that sought the Lord and grew spiritually. And at the end of his life, he's like a spiritual giant. He's just like pouring out all these prophecies about things that are going to happen like hundreds of years later. Where'd that come from? He was a plain man. He was upright. And then again, the final thing, he esteemed the birthright. Maybe he didn't go about it the right way, but he had that vision and he was looking afar off, not on the temporal, not on the thing right in front of his face. He's like, you know what? That birthright, that's important. That's something precious. If I can get my hands on that, and all I got to do is trade away this pottage, well, that would be worth it. And that's a lesson that we can take from that. So, yeah, we're out of time, so we're just going to wrap it up there. Hope you get something valuable out of that lesson. All right, thank you.